Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're jumping into something pretty complex, but really fascinating. We're looking at the long-term behavior of solutions for the nonlinear stochastic heat equation, SHE for short. But, and this is the key part, we're focusing on the version without a drift term.
That's right. It's a specific challenge. We'll be drawing heavily from a paper, invariant measures for the nonlinear stochastic heat equation with no drift term. It's by Le Chen and Nicholas Eisenberg, just published online, I think, February 2024, in the Journal of Theoretical Probability.
Okay, so for you listening, here's our mission in this deep dive. We want to figure out when the solutions to this equation, which kind of describes random change over space and time, when did they actually settle down, settle into some kind of, you know, long-term statistical stability?
Like a predictable pattern emerging from randomness eventually.
Exactly. Think of maybe a constantly shaken snow globe. Will the snowflakes eventually have some predictable overall distribution, even with the shaking? We're talking about these things called invariant measures. And the goal is to get the main ideas without drowning in super technical math.
Yeah, and what's really striking and what this paper brings out is just how sensitive these systems are. It turns out that, like, really subtle mathematical details about the noise, the randomness, and the starting point.
Initial conditions.
Precisely. Those details can completely change whether the system finds a statistical equilibrium, this invariant measure, or if it just, well, stays unpredictable forever.
Wow. Okay. It's like tiny changes having huge long-term effects. And to help us navigate this, we've got our expert here who's great at boiling down this kind of complex research into, well, understandable pieces. So let's dive in. First up, this stochastic heat equation, what is it fundamentally, and why is no drift term such a big deal?
Okay, so the basic equation looks like this. 12. Now that drift term you mentioned, usually it acts like a restoring force.
Like friction or something, pulling it back to average.
Kind of, yeah. Think of a pendulum with air resistance. It eventually settles down. That resistance is like a drift term pushing it towards stability. Our equation here doesn't have that automatic pull towards a stable state.
Ah, okay.
And that makes finding these invariant measures, these long-term statistical patterns, much more challenging. The paper even mentions, you know, in section 5.1 that equations with drift often have these dissipativity conditions that help guarantee stability. We don't have that luxury here.
So no safety net. Got it. Now, what about the E term, the noise? The paper calls it white in time and homogeneously colored in space. Can you unpack that a bit?
Sure. White in time means it's completely unpredictable from one moment to the next, like pure static, no correlation between time points, however close.
Just constant fresh randomness hitting the system.
Exactly. Then homogeneously colored in space means the statistical nature of the noise is the same everywhere in space, but it's not necessarily white in space, meaning it can have some spatial structure or correlation.
So it might be like lumpier in some places than others, but the type of lumpiness is consistent everywhere.
That's a good way to put it. The color refers to this spatial correlation structure. It's defined by something called the correlation measure, or it's Fourier transform, the spectral measure. That spectral measure basically tells you which spatial frequencies or patterns are dominant in the noise.
Okay, random jolts over time with a consistent spatial texture. What about the rough initial conditions mentioned?
Right, that just means we're not starting with something perfectly smooth. We can have initial states that are quite irregular, even spiky. There's a condition, equation 1.3, basically ensuring they're not infinitely messy, that they're integrable in a certain sense. It allows for a wider, more realistic range of starting points.
Makes sense. And the function BUU? It has to be Lipschitz continuous.
Yeah.
Technical term, but what's the gist?
The core idea of Lipschitz continuity, equation 1.4, is that it limits how wildly the system's internal dynamics, the BU part, can react to changes in U. If U changes a little, the change in BU is bounded. It prevents sort of instantaneous, infinite reactions, keeps the nonlinearity somewhat controlled.
So it can't just explode in response to a small fluctuation.
Exactly. The paper mentions the parabolic Anderson model, where BU is just as a simple linear example where this holds.
Okay. Now, how do we even make sense of this equation with the noise? The paper mentions a mild solution.
Ah, yes, the mild solution. Equation 1.5. It's a standard technique in stochastic PDEs. You essentially rewrite the equation using integrals. It involves the heat kernel, GTX, which describes how heat diffuses.
How a point of heat spreads out.
Precisely. And it uses the Walsh integral, which is specifically designed to handle integration against this kind of space-time white noise. So the mild solution combines the deterministic diffusion part from the heat kernel with the integrated effect of the noise. It's a rigorous way to define what we mean by a solution.
Okay, so it's a mathematical tool to handle the equation properly. Now back to the main goal, invariant measures. Why are they so important? What do they really tell us?
They're fundamental for understanding the long-term statistical picture. If an invariant measure exists, it means that if you run the system for a very, very long time, the probability of finding the system in any given configuration settles down to that specific measure. It's the system's statistical steady state. It doesn't change anymore, statistically speaking, as time goes on.
The snow globe settling, statistically.
Exactly. And often its existence implies something called ergodicity, which roughly means that if you watch the system for long enough, the time average of its behavior will match the average calculated from the invariant measure. The paper mentions the general strategy from Tessitore and Zabsik. You need to show the system's transitions are well-behaved, Markovian, and that key quantities, like moments, stay bounded.
Okay, a stable statistical fingerprint for the long run. Now, the paper introduces a weight function. Why do we need that?
Right, the admissible weight function, definition 1.1. This function helps us define the mathematical space we're working in. It's like defining the boundaries of our analysis. We look at solutions in a weighted space, LRD, where functions are measured considering this weight.
Why weight it?
It allows us to handle solutions that might grow towards infinity, but do so in a controlled way, captured by the weight. The key admissibility condition, is ATTPS, ATTX. Intuitively, it means the heat diffusion process doesn't make the weight function itself blow up too fast. It keeps things mathematically manageable.
So the weight function helps tame potentially unbounded solutions, defining a space where analysis is possible.
Precisely. It defines the sandbox where our well-behaved solutions and the invariant measures should live.
Got it. Now, theorem 1.1 seems crucial. It's about conditions for bounded moments. Why do moments need to be bounded?
Well, the moments measure the overall size or spread of the solution, specifically the second moment, EUT, EU Eero, which is like the average squared size weighted by Aksak. If this moment kept growing indefinitely over time, equation 1.8 asks for it to be bounded, it would mean the solution is spreading out or growing uncontrollably. You couldn't have a stable limiting distribution then.
Makes sense. Things have to stay somewhat contained. Statistically.
And theorem 1.1 gives necessary and sufficient conditions for the second moment at a single point, EUT, X to be bounded. This involves two key conditions, one point narrow A and one point narrow B. Condition one point narrow A, AUD, is about the noise. It's a condition on the spectral measure basically saying the noise can't be too rough at low frequencies. It's actually a stronger version of the well-known de Lange's condition.
Okay, so the noise has to be somewhat smooth, at least on average.
In a specific mathematical sense, yes. And condition 1. Narrow B, 6.4 LB, or Laro, connects its noise measure directly to the Lipschitz constant LB of the nonlinearity DOU.
So it's a balance. The strength of the nonlinearity LB has to be small enough relative to how smooth the noise is, inversely related to sway.
Exactly. It's a beautiful, precise condition showing the interplay between the noise and the system's internal reaction needed for local stability. If the nonlinearity is too strong for the given noise level, the moments can blow up.
Fascinating. And corollary 1.2 just confirms that if you start in this nice weighted space, Elber, you stay there.
Essentially, yes. Mm-hmm. If the initial condition is in Elber and Yis is admissible, the solution remains in that space almost surely. It validates our choice of space.
All right, now for the big one, theorem 1.3, the existence of the invariant measure itself. It introduces tightness. What's tightness?
Tightness, equation 1.8 is a probabilistic concept. It means that the probability distributions of the solution at different times don't escape to infinity. You can always find a compact sort of bounded region in our function space that contains most of the probability mass uniformly over time.
So the cloud of possible states doesn't just spread out indefinitely thin.
Exactly. It stays relatively concentrated. And tightness is crucial because it's a key condition needed to guarantee that a sequence of probability measures has a convergent subsequence. Theorem 1.3 then gives the full set of conditions for tightness and the existence of an invariant measure.
Okay, what are the extra ingredients needed?
You still need the bounded moment conditions from theorem 1.1, equations 1.0, but you also need another admissible weight function, let's call it Russ, related to in a specific way. Equation 1.1c, if there's a condition connecting Russ to the initial data, equation 1.17, and importantly, a slightly stronger condition on the noise spectral measure, equation 1.13.
Well, okay. Another weight function and a stronger noise condition. Why the extra complexity?
Well, the second weight function seems technically necessary for the tightness proof in this weighted space setting. And the stronger noise condition essentially requires a bit more smoothness or faster decay of the noise's spectral measure. As remark 1.2 notes, these noise conditions can be combined into a neat integral form, equation 1.19, and they state it's almost optimal.
Meaning they've likely pushed the conditions right to the edge of what's possible.
That seems to be the implication. It's close to the minimal requirement on the noise for things to work out. Once you have all these conditions met the moment bounds, the tightness from the extra weight function and noise condition, then a standard result called the Kralov-Bogoliubov theorem, mentioned in 1.9, lets you construct the invariant measure. It basically averages the solution distributions over time.
Okay, so it's a multi-step process. Control the moments locally, ensure the distributions don't spread out tightness using some extra tools, and then this theorem guarantees the existence of the long-term statistical state.
That's a good summary. It's quite an intricate structure.
Now, the paper gives examples in section 5 to make this more concrete, right? How does this compare to cases with drift, for instance?
Yes, section 5 is very helpful. First, section 5.1 revisits the drift case. As we said, drift often provides dissipativity, like equation 5.2, a mechanism that forces solutions towards equilibrium. Without drift, the conditions on the noise and nonlinearity, LB, become paramount.
It's all about that balance we discussed.
Exactly. Then section 5.2 compares their noise conditions, like 1.0 array, to earlier work, specifically by Tessitore and Zabcik, referencing condition 5.4. They argue their conditions are maybe more natural or easier to check in some cases, avoiding potential issues with things like square roots of measures or signed inverse Fourier transforms. They give examples 5.2 and 5.4 to illustrate. They also note a technical point about different Fourier transform definitions, remark 5.1, which is important for careful comparisons.
Good to know their conditions might be more user-friendly in some ways. What about the types of initial conditions their theorem covers?
That's a real strength highlighted in section 5.3. Their framework is quite broad. Simple bounded initial conditions, example 5.5, are obviously covered. But more significantly, they can handle a Dirac delta initial condition, example 5.6.
Starting everything at a single point. That's pretty wild.
It is. It's a very common and important case in SGE studies, representing like an instantaneous point source. Being able to show convergence to an invariant measure from such a singular start is quite powerful. They even show it works for some initial conditions that aren't in the basic L per space, like functions decaying, like example 5.7, provided A isn't too large. They contrast this cleverly with a case where a growing function messes things up, showing the subtlety.
So it handles smooth starts, sharp point starts, and even some unbounded starts. That's quite flexible.
Very flexible. Then section 5.4 gets into specific noise models. They look at Bessel and Matern kernels, examples 5.8, 5.9. These are standard models for spatial correlation. They actually work out the conditions on the parameters of these kernels, propositions 5.2, 5.3, that ensure their crucial noise conditions sod and hold.
So you can plug in parameters for those common noise types and see if stability is expected?
Precisely. They also look at a Ries-type kernel, example 5.9, and argue their conditions are simpler to verify there, too. Finally, section 5.5 gives concrete examples of the weight functions that work, equation 5.22, proposition 5.4. Things like exponential decay, exponential decay, 1 plus u. And importantly, they show what doesn't work, like weights that vanish outside a finite region, or using the heat kernel itself as a weight.
Okay, so those examples really ground the theory, showing what kinds of noise, initial states, and weighting schemes fit the bill.
Exactly. They demonstrate the applicability and the boundaries of the theoretical results.
All right, let's try to wrap up this deep dive. What's the big picture takeaway here?
I think the core insight is that even for this relatively simple-looking equation, the nonlinear SHE without drift achieving long-term statistical stability, finding those invariant measures, it really hinges on this delicate, quantifiable balance.
The balance between?
Between the roughness of the noise captured by its spectral measure, specifically conditions like zero and barrow, the strength of the system's nonlinearity, the Lipschitz constant LB, and the properties of the initial state. And all this needs to be analyzed within these carefully chosen weighted function spaces defined by rho.
Oh, okay. And for you, the learner, why is understanding this balance useful?
Well, it gives you a shortcut, right? Instead of getting lost in the complex proofs, you get a feel for the fundamental ingredients needed for stability in these kinds of noisy, evolving systems. It shows that even without an obvious stabilizing force like drift, stability can emerge if the noise isn't too wild and the system doesn't overreact to itself. That's a great way to put it. And maybe it leaves you with a question to think about. How might these specific mathematical conditions on spectral measures, on Lipschitz constants, the role of weight functions, how might they translate or have analogs in other complex systems driven by noise?
Like in climate modeling, maybe. Or finance.
Exactly. What plays the role of the spectral measure of the noise in, say, market fluctuations? What corresponds to the weight function defining the important states? Thinking about those connections, well, that's part of the journey in exploring stochastic processes and their really broad impact.